Next Chapter Podcasts.
The 500. J.A.M. been walking us down through that 2012 edition, so it ain't nothing to you. Hundreds more to go and in need of a friend. The king of these four, Angelo, talking the 500 until the end. Talking the 500 until the end. With my man J.A.M. on the 500, talking the 500 until the end.
Dallas Coward, ride the cold!
Rise above, you gotta rise above. I wanna break through the fucking wall when I listen to this song. God damn, god damn. I'm angry. I want to fight people. The song is Rise Above. It's by Black Flag from their 1981 album Damage. It's number 340 out of 500 on the 500 with me. What's up, everybody? Fleece Army. How you doing? Fleece Army. I'm going on the road in December. December 9th through the 12th, I will be at the Edmonton House of Comedy in Edmonton, Canada. Can't wait to go there. Big mall. December 16th through the 19th, I will be at the St. Louis Funny Bone. I don't know if it's a St. Louis one, but it's in St. Louis and it's a Funny Bone. And December 30th through the 1st, I will be at the Vancouver House of Comedy in Canada. I'm going to be in Canada a lot. Oh, and December 20th, I'm doing a goddamn comedy jam at the Comedy Cellar in New York City. You can get tickets at comedycellar.com or you can stream it at home at mintcomedy.com. Watch it, come to it, whatever you got to do. And you can get tickets to all those shows at my website, joshadammyers.com. Also, I'm at the Comedy Cellar almost every night of the week. Come, be a part of my life. Join our Patreon, patreon.com/the500podcast. We appreciate everybody that's a member. For $5 or more a month, you get to be on the podcast. You get to comment on each album. We read your questions and your thoughts to our guests. So go, if you already are a member, go to Patreon, our Patreon, And there should be something up there that says the album, comment what your thoughts are. We will read it. And we only read the Patreon first. You can comment on the Twitter. You can comment on other stuff. But Patreon gets first dibs. We're only going to read a few of them. All right. Black Flag. Oof. Those symbols are nasty. They're scary. But you know who's not? My guest. My guest today. Another dude from the state. Michael Ian Black. This was a fun one. Michael is a legend in the comedy world. Wet Hot American Summer, Inside Amy Schumer, Reno 911, The State, Stella. He has a podcast called Obscure with Michael Ian Black. I think he even has a snack podcast because he was eating snacks at the beginning of this. I knew this was going to be fun right from the jump. I got a good laugh out of him. He was fun. He was great. He was knowledgeable. And he was our guest. Rate, review, and most importantly, subscribe to the 500 and listen free on all platforms. Follow me at Josh Adam Myers on all social media. Go to my website, joshadammyers.com, for all tickets. Email the podcast at 500podcast@gmail.com. Follow the Facebook group run by Crazy Evan. And for all things 500, go to our website, the500podcast.com. All right. You guys ready for this? Here we go with episode 340. Out of 500 with Damaged by Black Flag. Rise above, you got a scoogadoo.
It's a podcast, baby. Let's just roll.
This is a podcast? This is actually a congressional testimony, bro. This is all on the record. Fauci, come on out here, dude.
Jesus. That's so unexpected.
So do you remember? Do you remember meeting me at Just for Laughs?
No. I don't even remember being at Just for Laughs. What
year?
Dude,
2000 and when did I have my existential breakthrough? 2018. It was No. It was 2019 because I was actually right about to record the first episode of this podcast, and I did it with a comic there. The first time I did it was with Big J Okerson in a hotel room at the Hyatt. But that was when I was like having my midlife crisis. I was 38, and you and I were out front of Ron Bennington's Unmasked, and I started talking to you about, you know, like very Eckhart Tolle, you know, being present, how precious life is. And it was funny because I think you were like in a hurry to get somewhere. And then I opened up about this stuff and you and I talked for like 15 minutes out front of there about very, very deep Dharma-y deity fucking life, how beautiful, how precious it is. It affected me. Do you remember it at all?
None of it rings a bell. None of it rings a bell.
One of the biggest conversations of my life. I was like, dude, Michael Ian Black. I mean, this guy is dialed in.
But, you know, because I'm so present in the moment, these things flow through me. You know what I'm saying? Like it just flows in, it flows out. I don't remember what I was doing 10 minutes ago, you know, because I'm so present, Josh. I'm so present.
I know what you were doing. You were doing a snack podcast.
Oh, thank you for reminding me. I was doing a snack podcast 10 minutes ago. That's right.
Tell us about that before we get into the podcast. Tell us, what do you got going on in your career? What's
so little, so very little.
Really?
Go ahead. I have a podcast with my good friend, Tom Cavanaugh, called Mike and Tom Eat Snacks, Mates, as it's better known. We've been doing it for years and years, but we took a 4-year break and we've just recently relaunched it. So we're back at it.
Good. How many snacks are you eating, like, you know, in a normal day? Are you just full on snacks or do you do real meals?
Oh no, I do real meals, but then after my wife goes to bed, I just pig out on whatever's in the cabinets and secret eat.
What's in the cabinets? I'll tell you what's right in mine. Now, you tell me what's in yours.
Right now there's some tortilla chips.
Nice.
There's some popcorn, there's Frosted Flakes, that's been my go-to lately.
Yes.
I feel like there's something else, some other chip that, there's Dots Homestyle Pretzels, which is a new discovery. Tremendous pretzel. Just a tremendous pretzel if you haven't tried it.
Pretzels are incredible. I like pretzels with peanut butter in them. That's my go-to. Yeah. Pretzels with peanut butter.
Delicious.
I'm more of a sweet guy at the end of the night because I don't get high until I'm done with all my shows. So around like 1-2 in the morning, I get home. I do a big handful of Swedish fish. I go down, I walk the dog, then I come up, then I attack the chocolate and I go Kit Kat Bites, Rolos. Mm-hmm. Then, like you said, popcorn. I do a bag of Skinny Pop. I put like three handfuls of that in a bowl. Then I take a big handful of cold Raisinets, throw that in, and then I sit on the couch and watch Pardon the Interruption, and then I fall asleep as soon as I'm done.
Great. I mean, that's a great ritual. Fantastic.
Dude, this is really cool for us, man, because I'm a huge fan of everything that you've done. You know, all the shit you've done with David and Michael is incredible. You know, we've had a multiple, Adam, how many people from the state have we had on now?
I'm not sure. I have to look that up.
He's new.
I feel like I'm the third or fourth, right?
I think you're about the fourth. We've had David, we've had Carrie.
Yeah.
I maybe think that's it. Both of them, horrible episodes. They have no idea what they're talking about.
Right.
Especially David, which the greatest joke that David did, because I'd never met him before, Mike, was we go down the Zoom and on the wall there was a printed out picture of me and I was like, what is that, me up there? And he's like, yeah, I always have that up there for creative inspiration. This is really a big deal for me.
Yeah.
So which is cool about you doing Black Flag is there's something about the comedy and the work that you guys do that is extremely punk rock. Because it's so different than everything else other people were doing at the times when those things were released. And still to this day, there is nothing like, you know, the products that you've put out. So tell me, like how has punk rock influenced you and like how did that start? Did it start at like an early age or what?
I got into punk probably my sophomore year of high school, maybe junior year of high school. And up until that point, I'd pretty much just been listening to kind of whatever was on the radio, kind of top 40 popular music.
What's that?
So like, that would have been the mid 80s. So like Duran Duran, Michael Jackson, Madonna, all of that shit, which I still like. But at the time, I would have denied that I liked it. And then, oddly, there was no place to really find Discover music. Like, you couldn't. There was no way to do that. Like, there was a record store at the mall, but they didn't really have anything interesting. But I had a subscription to Rolling Stone magazine. And then once in a while, Rolling Stone would kind of review something that I didn't understand. I didn't know what it was. And the first time I remember that happening was they reviewed a Philip Glass album. Mm-hmm. And I went out and got that. And I was like, I don't know what this is, but I don't like it. And then they reviewed Husker Du's Candy Apple Gray, which was their major label release. And I was like, this sounds interesting. And I got it. And then that album opens with basically just static. And I had it on cassette. So I thought the cassette was broken.
Yeah.
It opens with like just this sound. And then it goes into. And I kept listening to that and realizing that it took me a while to understand that they were doing that on purpose.
Yeah.
And it was sort of when that dawned on me that you could just like sort of make noise on purpose and then do this sort of really fast, hard sound and sort of screaming vocals. That kind of opened my mind a little bit.
So this is your first introduction, in a sense, to punk rock. You haven't heard Sex Pistols before heard Minor Threat. Wow.
Nothing.
Wow.
And then within like, I don't know, 6 months, I was starting a punk band with my high school friends.
What were you playing? What were you on? Let me guess. Fuck. You're not bass. Are you bait?
No,
you're
come on.
Right, I am sorry. Jesus.
What am I, a schnook bass?
I mean, come on. Duff McKagan's a great bass player. The dude,
he's
Kurt Novoselic.
Novoselic. There's a schnook in Nirvana. It's Novoselic.
Do you remember when he threw the bass up and it nailed him in the head? Like, I mean, that's a schnook move if I ever saw one. Dave Grohl's not doing that because he's on the drums.
He was on the drums.
Sorry, let me guess. Your vocals. Your vocals.
Of course, you are.
Yeah, you're a star. That's why. I know.
Yeah. I would have played an instrument. I didn't know how to play an instrument. So I was vocals. So that's when I really sort of got deeper into my punk rock education. And that's when I was listening to college radio late at night and going to the Princeton Record Exchange in New Jersey and digging through all their shit and just looking for weird shit. And that's where I found Black Flag for the first time was... almost certainly at the Princeton Record Exchange. And Black Flag, in my memory, is the first band whose album covers kind of scared me.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, this shit is scary.
Yeah.
There's like a nun and a knife hiding. There's like some dude hiding behind a leg. There's just like, and it was very stark and sort of two-dimensional. The logo scared me, just the four vertical lines.
Yeah.
I was like, this shit is too much for me. I hadn't even heard it. I was like, this shit's too much.
just like a black stripes. You're like, there's something I feel very triggered by this. I don't know what it is. They might be anti-Semitic. Yeah, there's who knows what it is. That's the thing about that logo is that if you just see that and you see that on people's arms, you're like, this is a Nazi.
Guy did time. If you see that, you're like, oh no, this guy spent some time upstate.
Yeah.
You're like, it's very intimidating without context. The name itself is scary. It's a brilliant name for a band. Black Flag. Holy shit.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, that's one of the most iconic, you know. So simple. Find out also, Adam, find out who created that. I think it was Henry Rollins that might have done that. Maybe I'm wrong. I have no fucking idea.
I know it wasn't. I'm almost sure it wasn't, because when he joined the band, my understanding is he got it tattooed on him. So the logo, I think, was already existing by the time he joined.
Okay. All right. I think, because I was going to ask you this later, is there a more iconic symbol than those four stripes? Like who, what, what's
Van Halen is the only other like sort of band logo that I think of, like when I think of like just classic logos, but Black Flag is so much better.
Oh my God.
So yeah. Much better. It's, you know, it's incredible.
You know, what's one of the lamest, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, like little fucking, like, I don't know what it is. Pull that thing up. I hate that.
Their COVID-19 logo.
Yeah, dude.
It's their cock ring, spiked cock ring logo. Yeah,
it's a fidget spinner.
Yeah. That's not a great logo, but yeah, whatever.
Logo. They try their best. I mean, they're millionaires. No, they're millionaires. They're fine. But yeah, so you see that, you're intimidated by it. So then, yeah, look at that. I just hate that.
Yeah, it's not great. I'm with you.
It's like a European ambulance symbol or American. I don't know. It's an ambulance. So continue. Yeah. So you're saying you see that, but you're intimidated by it. You're scared. So then what, how did you suddenly, cause Husker Du, we did Husker Du. I might fuck the name up, cause we haven't done this. It was like almost 3 years ago. We did the record, Newfound Glory.
Land Speed Record.
No. It was the one right after Zen Diaries.
New Day Rising.
New Day Rising. And that was my first like real deep dive into Husker Du. The only time I had heard about them prior to that, besides like in passing, was, you know, in Joe Dirt when he's like Husker Du's, Husker Don'ts. And so when I had no idea it was going to be punk rock, and nor did I even have any idea that Minnesota was this huge place in music, putting out a band like Husker Du. And then you dive into it and you're like, wow, this band fucking rules. Mm-hmm. But that's totally different than anything that was on this record. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I hear a lot of overlap. I hear a lot of similarities. Fucking my dogs are fucking, the mailman's here and the dogs are going nuts.
It's all good, dude. I got Lekka in the back. I thought it was my neighbors. I have these college students that I live in Gramercy, and I have these college students that play like, what is that? Not beer pong. It's like a collaboration of beer pong and what's the one where you throw the sandbag into the little hole?
Cornhole.
Yeah. They do like a variation. It's actually quite good. If I was friends with them, I think maybe I'm just mad that they don't invite me over.
Go on over. Ask if you can play. I'm sure they'd let you.
I'm 42, bro. I think they're like 23. And then I'm like, hey, guys, my voice, like, how you doing? I've been hearing you guys play cornhole beer pong. Mind if I join in? Oh, what are you listening to? The new Olivia Rodrigo? Have you guys heard Husker Du? All right. You don't like it? Okay, I'm going to go back to my domicile.
You guys like Maiden? I got some Maiden.
Yeah, you guys want to hear some Judas Priest? Now, he's a homosexual, but he is one of the good ones, all right?
I hear a lot of, particularly in their older stuff, the drums relate, the guitars relate, but like to me, Husker Du is kind of like Thinking Man's punk, and I never thought of Black Flag as like Thinking Man's punk, even though I think it is, you know, it is,
yeah,
but I never thought of it that way. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that Husker Du is particularly like Thinking Man's punk either. It's all, to me, it's all sort of similar.
Punk music for the most part is, if you go back to the beginning of the roots of it where it started, and then listen to every different variation, even if it's a band like Wire, which is more post-punk. And I actually don't even know if they're post-punk. I think they are kind of, came out 79. Mm-hmm. But like, yeah, the Minutemen, they all kind of have this same, whether it's the tempo, it's the lack of, I mean, you know, because you would never call somebody in a punk band like, oh my God, one of the most brilliant guitarists of all time. But there's a passion, there's an energy, and there is very like almost going against the norm. That is the one like thing that runs through every punk record that I've ever listened to.
Yeah, right? And that's kind of the point of it.
Yeah.
But ironically, not ironically, Greg Ginn, who's the guitarist in Black Flag, was named by Rolling Stone magazine one of the top 100 guitarists of all time. He's number 99. Yeah, number 99.
I like that. I'll put him in there. All right. So what's your first foray into Black Flag? What album did you buy?
I don't think I bought an album first, but I think our band was learning. I think we played TV Party, which is on Damage,
which is on this record. Yeah.
And so that was the first one that I really like spent any time with. And I liked it. I liked that it could be dumb and funny, and it made sense it sort of made sense to a high schooler, like, oh yeah, we're gonna make fun of this like dumb shit that people do at night because they have nothing else to do with their lives. They go and they watch TV and have a couple of brews. Like, I liked that, you know, it, that kind of spoke to me. It made sense. And I don't even know that I knew it was Black Flag when we were learning the song. I just knew it was TV Party.
Yeah.
It was cool. It's a cool song.
It's a, definitely a cool song. It's actually it's probably the funniest song on this record.
I think it might be the only funny song that I can think of that's on the record.
I think you're right. Yeah. I mean, so what, so then what draws you to a band like Black Flag then? Like what, like how are you on this album on my podcast? Like what, like how did this, how
well,
did
at like, a certain so, point, yeah, like tell me. You go from Husker Du to the Sex Pistols to then you me is at Princeton Record Exchange just looking for shit that seems nuts. So I pick up the Dead Kennedys, I pick up Circle Jerks, and once you're sort of in that world of like hardcore punk rock, like you can't avoid Black Flag. Like yeah. at some point you're going to listen to Black Flag.
Yeah.
You just have to, because they're, you know, I don't know if they're the first, but they're certainly among the first. And I think, you know, they're sort of known as the godfathers of hardcore punk music because they were kind of blazing this trail that these other bands were more or less following. So, you know, you have to, you just sort of have to know who Black Flag is and get to know it.
I don't think it overstates things to say that the Beatles were the greatest gift to entertainment and culture of our time, a secular religion, if you will, with their universal appeal and demonstrable impact on people's lives. I'm Robert Rodriguez, host of Something About the Beatles. With every episode, I speak with historians, musicians, artists, and Beatle witnesses, all in the service of fresh insights into the most joyous cultural entity the world has ever known. I hope you'll join me and listen to Something About the Beatles, now on Evergreen and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Chad Nicefield.
And this is Justin Press.
We're the host of Making Waves, the Shiprock podcast, a part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. We're inviting you to sail away with us on an epic journey in musical enlightenment. Every week, we bring you only the best artists in rock music and discuss everything from the cruise to the stage to the saga of being a professional recording artist. We'll have lots of special guests along the way, so tune in every week.
Your stateroom is available every Monday morning, so welcome aboard.
All right, here, let's find out about Black Flag then, because I really don't know much about them. I honestly, for a long time, thought they were from D.C. because I grew up in the Washington, D.C. area. So
like, I can tell you the D.C. connection because there is one.
Well, with Ian, right? So this is my cool little story about Henry Rollins. Right before I moved to Los Angeles. Cool. First of all, I should say I've seen Fugazi. I've seen Fugazi. It's a Korean barbecue. I've seen Fugazi live a few times. I used to play a bunch of free shows in the DC area. Never was like a huge, huge fan, but I had friends in high school that were really into hardcore, and they were like the cool kids that I was in kind of like a mock band with. For a moment, but they were the guys that I would go to concerts with. Like we saw like Orange 9mm and Korn, which I've talked about, at the old 930 Club. And so there was this cool thing. And people in DC would wear the Minor Threat t-shirts. They would wear the Bad Brains t-shirts. And so, but I never got into punk. I was more, you know, hair metal and then into grunge and punk never made its way into the music that I would listen to. It's aggressive. It's definitely a vibe that, like, this record was hard for me to listen to in the current state that I'm in, because I'm very happy. I'm walking around. I just moved to New York, and I'm listening to a lot of jazz right now. A lot of like laid back Oscar Peterson trio. And then it's like, okay, well, let's put on this record as I get on the subway. And it's just like, gang, 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 gang. And then the guys are dancing in the fucking, you know, on top and inside the subway train. And you're like, it's hard.
But that being said, you know, there's something that I always thought was very cool about it. Even though I might not have dug it, I would go to these stores in Georgetown where you could just see all the records that you had just mentioned, the cool T-shirts, the Manic Panic, the bomber jackets, the Doc Martens, everything about it I thought was really cool. It was just a music that I just, like I said, I just never connected to. And then cut to 2000 and I guess it was 2007, July of 2007. I'm getting ready to move to Los Angeles. And I go to, Adam, I want you to look it up because I might fuck it up. I don't want to say Fort Minor, but there's this field in Washington, D.C. And Ian from Fugazi and Minor Threat is putting on a free show. And I have a buddy, John Moyer, who I used to go to a lot of concerts with. And he's like, dude, come with me. We'll go check out the Simpsons exhibit because they were turning 7-Elevens into different like quickie marts around America. And I was like, well, I'd love to see that. And he's like, yeah, it's right by where that show is. So we'll check that out. And we go there and we're there early and helping Ian set up because there's no real roadies is Henry Rollins.
Cool.
And I'm just like, I go up to him and I talk to him for a few minutes. Is it? Yeah, I think it was Fort DuPont. I have a T-shirt for it. Fort DuPont Park. And I get to talk to him and just like the calmest guy, one of the nicest dudes. You know, I don't talk to him about punk music, but we just talk about the DC area and he couldn't have been cooler. And so then, I mean, cut to really me starting this podcast. Well, that's not true. I went to go see Bad Brains. Bad Brains was the first real punk band that I really started getting into because there was something I really, really loved about Band in DC. And then I went to see them live at the now gone House of Blues on Sunset Boulevard. And then I started this podcast in 2019. And, you know, realistically, like I said, Husker Du, that was one of the first real punk albums I've really did a deep, deep dive in. And who else did we do? We've done, you know, Minutemen, who I loved Minutemen. And now this, what else have we done? Adam, who else have we done? We've done,
I'm going through the list right now to see what punk bands we've done.
Who do we do with, not the Specials, who is that band? God damn, it doesn't make a difference. What I'm saying is, as I listen to this now more, I appreciate it more, but there's something about Black Flag that is just raw, it is scarier, it is almost more intellectual than a lot of the other music that we've done so far.
Yeah, I think they are. You know, looking back on it now again, they are more intellectual than I remember them being, maybe because my introduction to them was TV Party. But yeah, they're talking about real shit. They're talking about depression. They're talking about feeling fucked up. They're talking about, you know, rising up. You know, all the sort of classic pillars of punk rock music. And it is more aggressive. It is more minor sounding. It doesn't have, there's really nothing kind of poppy in it. Like Minutemen, I feel like, yeah, there's some pop stuff in there. And Who's Blue, there's some like pop stuff in there. And certainly like the Sex Pistols is almost, I feel like, a pop band.
That's a pop band, weird way. Yeah.
And Black Flag isn't doing any of that. You know, they're just like muddy and aggressive and sort of dirty sounding. And then you've got Henry Rollins and you sort of feel like listening to it that he might pop through the speaker and punch you in the face at any given moment.
Yeah.
You know, he might just be like, fuck you. Ow, Henry, you know. And he is a front man. I found like was like the first front man that I found kind of scary and intimidating. Yes. He just seemed like he wanted to fight and fuck people up. And if there was a mosh pit, it sort of seemed like, well, he was just going to get right in there and throw some elbows.
Yeah.
And that sort of simultaneously repelled me and attracted me. You know, I liked it and I was afraid of it. The next band that did that for me was NWA, where I was like, oh shit, these guys like mean business. You know? Like, they're not fucking around. I felt that way about Black Flag too, you know? And I don't know how much of it was artifice. I don't know how much of it was a construct, but it felt organic. And I think to a large degree it was. I mean, they were pretty young. I mean, I think Henry Rollins was like 20 when he joined the band. And the other guys were probably right around that age, maybe a year or two older. I don't know. But what's interesting to me about Black Flag is because Because I feel like most people associate Henry Rollins so strongly with that band is that he wasn't the original singer. There was another guy that in the conceptually the band comes from the guitarist, Greg Ginn. And there's a whole like weird backstory about the, how they got the record distributed. Greg Ginn, I think it's Ginn. I've never heard his name pronounced out loud. G-I-N-N.
Could be Ginn. Could
is
be
it Ginn. Ginn. It could
I
be.
No,
I don't know.
I have no idea. I'm going with you.
I like Ginn just because it sounds a little harder.
It does.
He, when he was 12 years old, started a company that sold electronic components through the mail called like Standard something tuner, whatever. And like was making like money doing this. So he was like creating catalogs and sending them out and distributing it and had this little business going. When Black Flag wanted to release their album, nobody wanted them. They sort of had this deal with this band called like Unicorn, who was like associated with MCA, and MCA wouldn't release the band. So Greg turned his company into a record label, SST Records. And that's where SST comes from. And SST ended up releasing a whole bunch of bands, including Minutemen. And their big act, I think, was Black Flag and Husker Du, originally was on SST Records.
And to go with what you're saying, I think that's one of the things that I found very cool about Minor Threat, about Fugazi, is they're basically doing what people that comics are doing now with Patreon, is they're going direct to the consumer. So it's like, all right, you don't want to put our album out. I'm going to create Discord Records, and then I'm going to sell my own shit, take my own money, pay everybody fairly. And you guys can go fuck off. I think that's punk rock. That is like what we're doing now in comedy is the exact same shit.
And I think Black Flag was the first band to do that. I might be wrong about that, but I feel like they were kind of the DIY pioneers that then Discord followed and other labels,
Adam,
followed.
Look that up. So here's my little smorgasbord of what I got. So originally they're called Panic. They're formed in 1976 in Hermosa Beach. Greg Ginn formed a band with the band's first vocalist, Keith Morris, who later went on to form the Circle Jerks. Chuck Dukowski eventually joined on bass. Brian Midgall was the initial
Dukowski,
drummer.
Such a schnook name. Dukowski.
Such a schnook, dude. Also could have been a great writer. Chuck Dukowski. He's a drunk. He's hanging out at a bar right now in the Lower East Side. This guy, he's fucking over. The drummer was later placed by Colombian drummer Robo. There was another band called Panic, so they changed their name to Black Flag. The name was suggested by Jin's brother artist Raymond Pettibone, who also designed the band's iconic logo. So big ups to Raymond, which is the stylized black flag represented as four black bars. Pettibone stated, if a white flag means surrender, a black flag represents anarchy.
Right.
I love that.
And
I
it's perfect.
That.
And you're like, yeah, that makes sense. Perfect. That makes perfect sense to me. It just looks anarchic.
100%. So they had one release with Morris in 78 called the Nervous Breakdown EP before he left the band and was replaced with the fan of the band, Ron Reyes, who he was a vocalist on Jealous Again EP, not to be confused with the Black Crowes Jealous Again, before he quit mid-performance. Oh, I love this. Before he quit mid-performance because of escalating violence in the crowd. I mean, that's punk rock we were talking about like PIL and all these other bands, like people like, dude, the Go-Go's would get spit on and it's like, and this dude can't take it.
What I think is interesting about that is that that was probably a moment. I mean, it was a moment before sort of punk rock was that. It was a moment where it was finding itself, was trying to figure out what it was. And when you think about like the kids who were punks versus like the kids who were metalheads, the punks tended to be, I think, a little more pacifistic. They were like more intellectual. They were like reading fucking Marx, you know, they were just, and it felt like the metalheads were the kids who like wanted to kick ass and drink beer and fuck shit up. And Henry Rollins may be one of the main drivers of this, that punk rock movement did have all those people in it, but it also had this super aggressive macho side that you would see at these shows. And I can understand how somebody who joined a punk rock band because he was like, fuck you, we want to do things our way, would show up and start singing into the audience and people are slam dancing. He's like, this isn't what I wanted. I didn't want people to get broken noses and concussions at the show. Fuck it, I'm out. And then Henry Rollins is like, yeah, more of that, please. You know, you can sort of see how that might have happened.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. You said how he sounds like he's going to like jump through your speaker and punch you in the face. Like he's literally singing in a fighting stance.
Oh, yeah.
The way that he gets down, he's all quads. And so he's like no shoes on. So he can just jujitsu you like he.
But like, think about like what was going on in like the punk scene elsewhere at that time and compare it. So like, look at the Ramones. Like the Ramones, you don't think of as like a violent band, right?
Not at all. Yeah.
You don't think of like the Talking Heads, who are like sort of thought of as like a punk band, or like Television. You know, these are like sort of arty New York, you know, we're gonna put on weird clothes and do our weird music at CBGB kind of bands. Yeah. And then fucking hardcore erupts in DC and LA and the whole vibe of it changes. So like in 77, 78, like all of that was still kind of being formed and nobody really knew what was what.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, DC is a fucking rough place. That's a rough town. So Minor Threat works. Fugazi works. Bad Brains works. That level of violence. I mean, this is a town where you have a really disproportionate, community from the wealthy and the poor. You know, the middle class. I don't know in the 70s what it was like, but if it's like how I grew up, I mean, I grew up in Montgomery County, where it's like, you know, right outside of DC, and you have the richest of the rich and the poorest of the poor, literally in the same county. And then Los Angeles, as everybody knows, Los Angeles is a hard town. Hermosa, on the other hand, you know, it's fucking where the Comedy and Magic Club is. I mean, they don't even let you cuss on stage, so they can go fuck themselves. But yeah, it's like, and you're a beach community, but still there's violence, there's racism, there's this, there's that. And I mean, you know, Henry is the epitome of that. He is that very well, like well-read dude that also is built like, you know, he's built like Joe Rogan. Like, yeah, dude, look at this. Mm-hmm. I mean, and this is, you know what I love about the first thing I noticed in this picture is just how racially diverse. There's like three black guys in there. This isn't like just, oh, you know, because people think of punk rock, they're like, oh, this is like skinheads and just white dudes. Like, this was everybody. We actually had a comic. I don't know if you know him. His name's Chappelle Lacey. He's a black comic, but also he used to be in, he used to do like the cheerleading in high school and college, and he's a big dude, and like punk rock changed his life because for the first time he could hear the lyrics that really represented him and in the pain of what he was going through. And because this isn't just like those bands that were out at the time that you mentioned, Madonna, Material Girl in a Material World, and Michael Jackson, you know, Please Be Mine Girl, this is like real shit. It's the same shit that I say lyrically, punk rock is, whereas it's the same as NWA, where they're talking about the real things that are happening in the world and the violence that people are dealing with. It's the same as the outlaw country people that were writing about what it was like growing up, you know, poor and fighting people. And it's like, it's, I think that's really ultimately what attracts a lot of these outsiders to this music, is that finally there is somebody that's speaking to them.
Yeah. And that's all I wanted out of music by that time in my life. All I wanted was somebody who was expressing the kind of anxiety and anger and, you know, the sense of being a misfit that I felt. And so punk rock, you know, came to me at a time where I really needed it.
Were you a total outsider? Like, you know,
I mean, doesn't every teenager think of themselves as an outsider? Every teenager thinks they're a misfit. Every teenager thinks they're an outcast. I was kind of a theater kid. I was, you know, I was the kid who got pushed into lockers, you know, like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I wasn't like terribly bullied, but like, you know, it was like, you know, I wasn't.
You were one of the cool guys. I was
Ducky. I wanted to be Ducky and Pretty in Pink, you know, like that's sort of where I was living.
Yeah.
Like that kind of kid.
Hey, this is Steve Choi, host of the Musicians Guild podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Within the four walls of the Musicians Guild, we'll be discussing the habits, idiosyncrasies, experiences, and general psychology of my friends and peers all involved with music in various capacities. Listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hello, Tom May here, host of Future Friday. I've spent the last 15 years on the road with my band, The Menzingers, where I've met all kinds of wild and fascinating people. So I started a podcast. On Future Friday, I talk to fellow musicians about the moments that made them, their passions outside of music, and the curiosities that tie us all together. I've also talked to the likes of UFO researchers, magicians, soldiers, and documentary filmmakers, and I'm constantly searching for folks that can shape and change our view of the world. You can check out Future Friday wherever you like.
So when did you start finding people like, you know, besides your group in high school? But it's like, it's over. That's the whole thing about high school is that we all think that that's the world. And I mean, one, I couldn't imagine like how horrible it feels now to have social media. But yeah, so there's so it's like you get out of like high school. Like, so where did you find, was it in punk rock or was it in comedy that you started finding that like connection with people that were like you?
Well, it started with the band. I mean, it started with that band, finding a few dudes in my high school who like wanted to do this thing, who could like get into this music. And we could like create a little something out of that. But I definitely felt like I carried that spirit with me when I went to college and helped start this comedy group, which in a lot of ways, you alluded to this before, had that same spirit. Like there was something super aggressive about my sketch group, The State. And that was purposeful. I mean, we absolutely thought of ourselves as a band, you know, kind of like a punk band more than a comedy troupe. It was a punk attitude that we brought to it. And we very deliberately, tried to infuse our material with the same kind of rhythm and aggression that we were listening to in the music. So for example, our sketches would be, you know, 2 to 3 minutes as opposed to like 9 minutes, which is what we were seeing on like SNL.
Yeah.
A lot of times it was as much about the energy of the sketch as it was about the actual jokes in the sketch. You know, it was just about like screaming into a microphone, like Henry Rollins was doing, you know?
Yeah.
And it was intellectual in that way, even though the material was super dumb. I mean, we were doing TV Party, but there was a lot of thought behind it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like you're meeting, you know, everybody that was a part of it. I mean, they're so cool now, but you could see like David going through the same experience that you went through in high school, and Robert and Tom and Joe, the only one, maybe Ken was a cool guy. Like he's kind of,
I think Ken Marino, I think was a cool guy in high school. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
he probably was. So like when you found them, did you guys all connect over punk rock or is there like,
no, no, not at all. We connected over comedy, but as the group found its voice and, you know, we were simultaneously hanging out all the time and, you know, doing everything together, like that ethos was absolutely the same ethos as I had in my band. Yeah. And when we started talking about like what we were doing, the idea of being a band, and I don't think the word like punk band ever sort of came up, but it was like the idea of being like an indie band, like this scrappy, like do it yourself kind of band. That's kind of what we thought of ourselves as.
How long from when you guys first got together and started writing sketches together did you guys actually get the television show? A few years?
4 years.
4 years.
Yeah. Three or four years.
So 3 or 4 years. So for 3 or 4 years, you're basically, I mean, are you doing this at like Groundlings? Are you doing this at?
No,
like,
we couldn't. There was no place to do it. That was the other like punk aspect of it. Like there was no infrastructure in New York City to support sketch. I don't know. There was no UCB. There was no anything. Like there were comedy clubs and that was it. So if we wanted to do a show, like we had to find the space, create a stage, like figure all of that shit out. There was no other way to do it.
Yeah.
So it's the same, you know, it's the same as a band putting on a show in somebody's basement or something. That's what we're doing.
And you're putting the, you're making the fucking flyers. Yeah. And also the state, it sounds like a punk rock band too. Yeah. So, I mean, I can imagine it just having the same kind of look like of like some of those old hardcore flyers. You're getting the venue, you're making your own merch, you know, because after a while you're like, man, people want, they really like this shit. Like people are like,
we weren't smart enough to sell merch, but yeah. But yeah, we were flyering, we were spray painting, you know, our shit on the sidewalks. Like we were, you know, we were doing all that shit.
No, that's beautiful. I love that because there's something to be said about, you know, like the state, the Mr. Show guys. Who did it? We just have on for Mr. Show. We did De La Soul, Brian Posehn. Mm-hmm. And I was like, if there could have been, it's perfect, which is basically, you know, kind of what Mr. Show was, because 3 Feet and Rising was mm-hmm. just this stream of consciousness record, which was very much like the Mr. Mm-hmm. Show episodes. And with the state, it's everything about those first few seasons were so different than everything. It's like you guys used one of your bad reviews as like promo for, can you remind, do you remember, do you know what I'm talking about? I think David had mentioned this.
When our show came out, we just got not all bad reviews, all. No, I don't think there was one good, good one. Review. Horrible. And we were obviously like bummed because we thought we were doing good shit.
Yeah.
And what really sort of turned the corner for us, I think, in terms of both our success on the network and our own confidence in ourselves, was we made a commercial that just used portions of all the bad reviews set to the Bee Gees, I Started a Joke. And we're just like in slow motion walking through like a field, like just morose, kicking at the ground, feeling sorry for ourselves. And then there's just, you know, this show should be, you know, flushed down the toilet. The executives who greenlight this show should be given drug tests, you know, just quote after quote after quote after quote. And then the last thing is, it says more miserable crap. And then it says with a date for when our new season premieres. And I feel like that was sort of the moment where it just sort of solidified, like for ourselves, like who we were. And it was totally punk rock. Like that sense of like, fuck you. Like we'll take what you gave us and we'll throw it back in your face.
100%.
And that was great.
Yeah. That's incredible. I mean, that's what makes this cool. That's what makes the state cool, is the fact that you're just like, we're going to do our thing. People dig it. And there's people that dig it, and they're not, you know, they're not the, like, I want to say the majority, but it's just like the people that get it fucking get it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's what's beautiful about it. All right. Where did I leave off with the, all right. So we got Pettibone, because I want to go right here. So he leaves the band, vocalist, Jealous Again. He's replaced by another fan, Dez Cadena. He did well as a vocalist, but with no experience singing nor vocal training combined with an intense touring schedule, he blew out his voice and decided to only play guitar instead. Then, here we go, DC native Henry Rollins, a.k.a. Henry Garfield, fronted the band State of Alert, and the two bands had formed a relationship. And at an impromptu show at A7 in New York City, Rollins had asked the band to perform Clocked In. The band offered to let him sing. Since vocalist Dez was switching to guitar, the band then invited Rollins to audition. Impressed by his stage demeanor, like we talked about, they asked him to become their permanent vocalist. He acted as a roadie for the remainder of the tour while learning Black Flag songs during sound checks and encores. Rollins came into the group with one recording credit to his name, with his prior band, who recorded No Policy on EP released earlier that year. And there were few opportunities for punk rock bands to perform in the Southern California area. Los Angeles Club The Mask was the center of the LA punk scene, but did not often admit bands from outside LA proper. Black Flag organized their own gigs, here we go, performing at picnics, house parties, and schools. It's just like,
can you imagine?
Like, it's like, it's your kids. It's like, Juliana, it's your kid Sierra. 2, 3, 4. I love it. That's what you got to do. That's what you guys did. It's just like, nobody's going to give us a fucking chance. Dude, it's the same shit I tell people that are disillusioned with their career and the norm in either LA or New York, same thing that happened with me, man, which is like, I went the old school route. I did new faces and nothing was happening. So I said, okay, how can I have fun? What do I love? Let me combine comedy and music. Let me start this show. And then the next thing you know, I'm getting everything that I want, because you have to do it yourself. If you don't, nobody's going to do it for you.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, I think in their case, in our case, it also felt like an imperative. It also kind of felt like, well, we don't have a choice. Like, this is just the shit we have to do. Like,
yeah,
not like this is just, you know, like when we started, it was like, we're a college comedy club, but we never treated it that way.
Yeah.
Like it was always like, no, this is like what we do. Like, this is everything. And when I was in a punk band in high school, it sort of felt the same way. It was like, you know, just a shitty high school punk band, but like we treated it deadly seriously. And, you know, that's something I've always liked about the bands that I've always liked, which is you just get the feeling like this is their lives. Like this is life or death for them. They'll bleed for this shit.
Yeah.
And I always liked that. That always attracted me about punk. It's like, they're not, you know, Black Flag wasn't trying to write a hit. They didn't have that illusion, you know.
No.
They were just like, we just have shit to say and we're going to say it. And that's fucking great. And we're going to tour the country in a fucking shitty van and we're going to eat fucking shitty food and sleep on somebody's floor. And that's going to be our lives and it's going to be fucking cool. And it is.
Yeah, it is. There's something cool about
when you're 20. It's not so cool when you're 40.
Yeah, when you're 40, fuck off, dude. Just give up at this point.
No, at that point, you're like, I want the hit.
There's some guys right now that are like working at like a Best Buy that are in a band. They're like, we got a clutch gig tonight. I know we got to sell these fucking flat screens, but we better dial the fuck in, man.
We're going to drive 5 hours.
5 hours.
Do this fucking gig for 30 minutes.
We're getting paid in chicken tenders, but they're good. They make them there, okay? No, I think you listen, it's, and to anybody listening, if you got an idea and there's something you want to do, don't wait on anybody to help you, just fucking do it. And then the people will come once you started doing it. And that's what sucks about it, is that you have to start it. And I think too many people are just like I have a buddy that's got this great comedy show idea and he does it and the show does well, but he's like, I want to sell it as a TV show. And I'm like, dude, and he's had production company after production company either get a shopping deal and then they drop it, or it just never gets passed. And I'm like, dude, just fucking make it. Mm-hmm. Just make it. Spend your own money on it. Make it. Put it out on you. You see it with people putting comedy specials now out on YouTube. It's like, just get it out there. Because if not, you're just wasting your time. And it's like, you can't wait. The industry has no fucking idea. Like, the fact that you guys got the state on the air is pretty fucking impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was just a confluence of circumstances and we just got very lucky, you know.
Was there like one person that just like believed in it, or what was it like? Cause it's just, you know,
No.
I mean, like,
you mean at MTV?
Yeah. At MTV.
Kind of. Yes. There were two. Doug Herzog, who was, you know, a young executive sort of heading up their original programming, which was new for them. And then the woman right under him, Eileen Katz, like they're the ones who went to bat for us. They're the ones who like stuck with us after that first season when it wasn't quite taking off. Yeah. They're the ones who believed in us, you know, point of view.
When did you see it click? You said in the first season wasn't taking off. When did you see like the big change?
Probably towards the end, probably towards the beginning of towards the beginning of the second season. I mean, things were starting to kind of move after the end of the first season.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you could just sort of sense like people were starting to pay a little attention. And then in the second and third seasons, like, you know, it really felt like we were building something, and then we fucked it all up. As you do.
Wait, how did you fuck it all up?
Well, we went to CBS. See, you know, MTV wasn't paying us anything. We were like, this is bullshit. Like, we're making $400 a week a guy. And it was like, this sucks. And then CBS was like, hey, come over here. We're like, all right. Yeah. Idiots, fucking idiots. But the truth is, like, we were like a punk band. Like, we couldn't have survived that much longer anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, it, you know, we were our own mosh pit. I mean, we were all elbows and knees, you know, we were like at each other, you know, not that we were fighting all the time, but just, you know, it's a lot. it's a lot to deal with. There were 11 of us and we were just fucking scrappy and like all the same attributes that helped us fuel our success were the same attributes that were like going to break us apart. You know, we were going to whirl apart at some point. So, you know, we had a nice little thing and then it fucking fell apart.
But on that note though, you step away for a few years, a few of you guys work with each other in different things, but
we were working with each other throughout. Like there was never, it was never like, fuck you, I never want to see you again. It was just like, this shit kind of sucks. And let's, you know, and then, you know, the group sort of split off into little things and people started doing shit here and shit there. And then, you know, we all continued to work with each other. Like that never went away.
Yeah.
It was never like a personal thing where people were like mad at each other.
And I'm, excuse me if I, for some reason, it was because when I was on the air, I fucking loved it so much. It was, is you, David and Michael Showalter. What was the show? It was
Stella.
That I loved that fucking show so much. And that was punk rock. And then Wet Hot American Summer. That's punk rock, because we talked to David about how that happened. And it's just like, it's just, you know, like we said, it's like the people that get it are going to fucking get it. And look where it's evolved into, because it was something that was made and got almost shelved. And then finally it starts catching this cult following and then becomes this huge thing where now you've had it, you're on Netflix. I mean, now that's what's so great about these, you know, I don't ever want to use the word selling out, because I love that Metallica thing when he's like, yeah, we sell out stadiums. And it's like, but that's what you do. You do your own shit. And then the industry comes calling to you, and then all the money and everything that you want, everything that you guys have done, even Reno 911 with Thomas and Carrie. I mean, it's so different. It's so cool. And it's almost with the state and Stella and Wet Hot, it's like, man, these are some things that are so special and they speak to certain people, and those people, I mean, they're, cause they were with you. Those people that watch the state, like they're with you with whatever you do, because you did something for them when nobody else was. And that's fucking beautiful, man.
Yeah. And that's what, you know, those bands were for me. You know, that's what Black Flag was for me. That's what like Minor Threat was and Fugazi was and all those Husker Du and all those bands, you know, that's what that shit was for me. It was like, that's what I needed when I needed it, you know?
Yeah.
And so that will always be meaningful to me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's that stuff. It feels formative. It feels like, you know, when people say that, you know, I am who I am because of whatever, that's what that means. It's like, I needed something at a certain point in my life and you're the one who gave it to me.
Yeah. And that's
Henry Rollins is a weird messenger. He's like a weird messenger for me in particular, but it's like, all right, dude, thanks. You know, I appreciate it.
I mean, but he's not much of a singer. Like that's the,
No.
You know, he's not much of a singer, but the passion that he's putting into it. I mean, that shows people. There's, you know, many bands. I mean, I know we have a fact coming up later, but like Kurt Cobain said that this is his top 50 records of all time, or maybe even 30. It's like this influenced people and showed people that, just like the state, showed people that they can do it. Oh, I have these weird ideas, or I don't know how to play guitar very well, but I can do like some power chords. Mm-hmm. And it shows people that you don't, you know, have to be Jimmy Page to play guitar. As long as it's me and my drummer talk about this all the time. It's like, you can be the most technically sound musician in the world, but if you don't have the feel, it's never going to work. The feel is more important than being able to play, you know, an actual, like, you know, like Spanish guitar or guitar solos. As long as you can go up there on stage and you just put everything into it, people are drawn to that. And I think that, you know, and so
not if you're giving a flamenco concert.
Yeah, of course. If you're doing that, you better know Spanish guitar. Okay. All right. Jaco Pastorius or whoever.
This is Krista Makes, guitarist and vocalist for Less Than Jake and host of Krista Makes a Podcast, a songwriting podcast where every week I'm joined by an amazing guest to break down the writing, recording, and release of one iconic song from their career. In our giant evergreen back catalog of episodes, we've had rock legends such as Dee Snider and Huey Lewis, punk rock favorites like Mark Hoppus, Fat Mike, and Brett Gurewitz, and up-and-coming artists of today such as Liz Stokes of The Beths and Genesis Owusu. We've had guests from all genres and styles of music, and I guarantee that if you peruse our back catalog, you'll see several episodes that'll make you say, man, I gotta hear that. Whether you're a fan of music or a creator of music yourself, you'll take away a whole new appreciation for the songs you know and love. Krista Makes a Podcast is available for free on all the places you could possibly listen to podcasts, and new episodes come out every Monday.
All right, so like here, a little doodad about this record. So this is the debut album with Henry Rollins' version of the band. He only joined weeks before recording it. It came out December 5th, 1981, and was recorded the October prior in West Hollywood. The band lived in another part of the building that housed the Unicorn Studios. Adam, find out where Unicorn Studios was in West Hollywood. I'm just curious what it is now.
Opening track, I will say, is one of the great songs.
Yes. It's in my opinion, I think it's one of the best songs on the record. And you said something about how this not being like pop. There's a couple tracks on here that have moments. What was the one that really like Damage 2?
Mm-hmm.
Is kind of, there's moments in it that are kind of poppy. Yeah. I know that's poppy for punk.
Yeah.
which sounds like a grandpas that support punk rock music. You know, poppies for punk.
But when you compare it to other stuff that was going on, like there's very little effort in terms of like melody, you know.
No,
but,
yeah,
but there's like much. Rhythmic shit, you know, like you know, and gimme, gimme, gimme,
yeah,
give me some more, like that, you know, that's catchy, you know. TV part, catchy. Rise Against, catchy. Like there's some catchy shit on there,
yes,
but it's not melodic in any way.
Not at all. But you know, and that's what's so cool about punk music is that like it's fucking, like you said, like Sex Pistols, it's pop, dude. It is pop. All right, where is 7501 Santa Monica Boulevard? Can you pull the map up for me? Because I would love to see what this is now. It's probably because, you know, where the I don't know if you know this, but
it's probably a Target.
Yeah, well, the fucking the studio that the Doors recorded LA Woman is now a Shake Shack.
Sure, why not?
It's just, it's like, it's just heartbreaking. But burgers are phenomenal, but you know, you just, all right, where is it? Where is that? Hold on, get rid of the escape. Hold on, what is that? Is that Santa Monica Bowl? Oh, I know where that is. The Bees and Nails. That's where I get my nails done. I think that's right by my, can you go around like and swoop just a little bit? Hmm. Oh, Gardner. Oh yeah. Is that the Astro Burger? Yeah. I know exactly where that is.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck yeah, dude. I'll be there on Sunday, dude. I'm going to stop by and pay homage. All right. Get out of that. Give me back to my thing.
Get a pedicure and pay homage.
I'm going to get my nails done with little black flag stripes on my nails. Don't think I won't do it. I'm doing it.
Pretty cool idea, actually.
Then I'm getting it done. I'm getting it done. I'm tagging you in it on my Instagram stories. Get ready, dude. So Ginn once stated that after Rollins joined, we couldn't do songs with a sense of humor anymore. We got into the very serious way of poet thing. Mm. So they started. Yeah, you could tell. I didn't listen. Mm-hmm. I don't know their previous stuff. And then drummer Robo was wearing bracelets on his left wrist that rattled when he played. The rattling, whenever he hit the snare drum, especially when he hit on the downbeats, became part of their sound. Wow.
Yeah, I can't hear that.
Neither can I.
I don't hear that at all.
So is there anything out of this that is important? Let me see. The earlier four-piece versions are more focused and much cleaner sounding. Damaged recording are more akin to a live recording with little stereo separation guitars and somewhat muddy. When asked about the low fidelity production, Spot has said they wanted it to sound that way. However, the artistic content expression on the album showed the band pushing punk or hardcore music to a new level with deeply personal and intensely emotional lyrics. As such, Damaged is generally regarded as Black Flag's most focused recording. Do you agree with that? Like, do you think
I don't have an opinion about it.
Okay.
I don't have an opinion. To me, Black Flag, like that Henry Rollins sort of era Black Flag, all has a pretty similar vibe from album.
They all
to
sound
album.
The same. Okay.
The same, I don't know, but like, I don't know, like more focused. I don't know. I don't know.
From what I know about hardcore music, you know, this is definitely a different sound than what Bad Brains was doing. Definitely than what Minor Threat was doing. Mm-hmm. But it still has all that same intensity. And like you mentioned, Rise Above. I mean, immediately you notice Henry Rollins's just, I mean, this like short, sharp, like bark.
Yeah.
Of a voice. And it's a much more potent instrument than anything else on the, you know, you think of Black Flag and you think about this record, it's like Henry is what's sticking out every single song. It's like he is angry. You can feel that when he's saying it.
I'm trying to think like if there's a better punk anthem than Rise Again. I can't think of one. Like it's just, that's just kind of, it just kind of encapsulates the movement.
Yeah. Adam, do you think while he's thinking about that, can you pull up like, maybe there's a list of like greatest punk songs of all time. I don't know if somebody, there's lists for everything. So I'm assuming. No, you're right. You're right. And what a way to open the record with.
Oh yeah. Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Are you for the world to be introduced to Henry Rollins? I think that's a perfect introduction. Mm-hmm. Six Pack's another song I really liked. Mm-hmm. It tackles the same subject matter as Minor Threat's Bottled Violence, though with the emphasis of being a drunk loser rather than beating the crap out of somebody else. This is the thing that I really liked about this record, and I think I really, really like about Black Flag. They make fun of stupid people. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? This is like Black Flag loves making fun of stupidity. So let me ask you, are dullards something that you guys like to, like, because I feel like in comedy, we have to make fun of the dumbs. But what are your thoughts on stupid people?
I have given this a little bit of thought because I always think about in comedy, I think about like Carlin and how he always positioned himself as the guy who does exactly that, just making fun of idiots, you know?
Yeah.
But then thinking to myself, like, that as much as I love Carlin, there's always something that rang a little false about that to me, if only because we're all fucking idiots, you know? And we all make bad decisions and say stupid things and trip over ourselves. And I never... In comedy, I don't like elevating myself and my intellect above sort of other people.
Yeah.
Even though not because other people aren't guilty of all this shit, but just because I know I am too. Like I'm as much a hypocrite as anybody else. And I don't like to pretend that I'm not. And I'm trying to think like how I think about Black Flag in those terms. There's definitely like in a lot of punk rock, and I think Black Flag included, there is a kind of moral posturing. There is a kind of like, you know, we're sort of leading you to a better way in a better day. And we're going to rise up, you know, we're going to rise against. But ultimately, most of it is just empty promises. Most of it is just sort of words. And,
yeah,
you know, it never translates into anything. But you know, when you're 19, 20, 21, maybe you just need to hear that. Maybe you need to have every generation needs to have that hope. I certainly think you do. And we were joking about Novoselic from Nirvana being a schnook. I don't really think that.
I thought we were connecting over that. That was our thing, dude.
But like he ended up running for office and you're sort of like, all right, like, you're an outsider now sort of trying to become an insider and make change and do something positive. Like I can get behind that. I can get behind people who like become activists and do shit. And I think Henry Rollins in his way is that, you know, I think he seems like the guy that he was to me. He seems true to the vision that I thought of Henry Rollins as. And I think he's maintained a lot of credibility. Whereas like Greg Ginn, the guitarist, ended up, and look, I don't know what's true, what's not true, but ended up like getting like investigated for like child abuse and like endangering his kids and like all this shit. And like, I think became a sort of like drunken mess.
Yeah.
You know, but that's, I mean, maybe that's, that's the other side of rock and roll life too. It's like you try something and then, you know, we all end up being a mess in one way or another.
Yeah. Some hold it together better.
Yeah.
Some let it destroy them, you know? One thing about Henry though, that you see, you know, probably you didn't see so much when he's doing Black Flag, but it's like, he, like we said, he's an intellectual, like he's a poet. He's putting on, he's written books. Like the guy is
He started like a publishing imprint. He's a thinker, you know?
Yeah. He's a thinker. And then, and me talking about like religion and stuff, like, cause I understand that you're an atheist, right? Henry Rollins wrote a piece in LA Weekly explaining why he isn't an atheist, but also cops to not having any religious or spiritual beliefs. And that attitude seems pretty on the mark for people who are heavy into punk anti-establishment philosophy. Did you start forming your atheist perspective out of cultural consumption as a youth, like punk rock, or did it come from somewhere else?
Well, I was raised without religion, so I guess I was sort of brought up more or less in a atheist / agnostic household. Now, I don't even know that I feel comfortable calling myself an atheist. Not because I don't think it's as simple as that.
Yeah.
I don't think it's as simple as saying I believe in God or I don't believe in God. I think there's a lot of questions and not a lot of very good answers. And if you know, atheism in a way proclaims an answer, you know, even if it's the negation, even if its answer is a negation of an answer.
Yeah. Yeah.
It still kind of has an answer. I think the world is more complex than that. And I've come to believe that there's that quote about quantum mechanics. Basically, if you think you know what quantum mechanics is, you are basically revealing that you don't know anything about quantum mechanics. It's something like that.
Yeah.
I'm starting to feel that way about the universe as a whole.
Yeah.
Which is that it just seems like every time we answer a question, it just pops 10,000 more questions up.
Yeah.
And that's indicative to me. There's a hubris that goes into saying, I don't think there's a higher consciousness. I'm starting to think there might be. And whatever you call that, you can call it that.
I mean, this is like what I've been trying to figure out through mushroom use and LSD use.
Has it worked? So,
sometimes I feel like, because it's like when you start really just thinking about existence and like, okay, well, there was the Big Bang. All right, well, then what was before that? And then like, how did that Big Bang cause? Well, it was energy. It was like, but what... So you have to take it back to somewhere, and it just keeps going and going and going. All I know, which isn't anything, is that there is an energy and a balance in the world. And once you accept that for every positive reaction, there's a negative reaction, and for every, and good things are going to happen to bad people and bad things are going to happen to good people. And there is no real, you know, concrete evidence in how this all started, and just to be able to enjoy it. Cause that's it. That's the main thing, is that I think, like, you know, I remember I got into a conversation with a woman about in Arizona of all places.
She probably doesn't remember that conversation.
She doesn't, but she got mad at me. She doesn't remember. She might, because I had just performed. I just headlined at a comedy club, and she was like complimenting me. And we started somehow talking about religion, and I said something, well, yeah, I'm not a very religious person. And then she looked at me, she goes, oh, are you one of those LA people that just believes in an energy? And I go, well, kind of. And she said, well, I really cherish my Christianity and my religious beliefs. And I'm like, totally, as you should, because and I said it, and I'm going to say it more honest here, which is just like, look, we're all scared of dying. We're all scared of what's going to happen after this. We have no idea what's going to happen. So certain things are created to give us an idea that we're all going to be okay. And if that's what makes you happy and makes you push on and enjoy this short time that we have on this earth, good for you. It's like all you get is these, you know, if you're lucky, 60 to 80 years, maybe 100, if you're really lucky and you eat
wheatgrass and shit like that. But for the most part, it's just, there is no idea. Nobody knows what happens. Nobody knows how it started. So just accept that and just enjoy. And once you do that, I feel like you're going to be in a good place, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I kind of agree. Because I think, well, I do agree, but I think the word enjoy maybe has a deeper resonance than the kind of like, you know, take a pill, have a good time. I think enjoying maybe encompasses something deeper and broader than that. And I'm not saying you were suggesting like just, you know, hedonistic it up, you know, go skinny dipping and get your dick sucked. Like, I don't think that's what you were saying.
Don't threaten me with a good time.
Don't get me wrong.
I'll take a dip and a sip. Come on, baby. Like, you're speaking my language.
All you
man.
Have to do is ask. I'll suck your dick.
All right.
I will totally suck your dick. Yeah.
David sucked my dick. You sucked Carrie. Didn't suck my dick, but I'm getting everybody on the state to suck.
Did you suck her dick?
I sucked her dick. Yeah. Right. I listened to PJ Harvey. It was great. No, you're right, man. No, I'm not saying like go out and rob banks and just do whatever the fuck you want, but in a sense, do whatever the fuck you want. That's it. You know?
Yeah. In a sense. Yeah.
Adam says,
do whatever the fuck you want.
Be good to each other. And what's the last part? I got to click on that. Be good to each other. Adam, why don't you say it, dude? You never talk.
Here's my philosophy. Be good to each other. Be good to nature and animals. Try your best to not be a dick when possible and hope for the best because you can only control so much.
Boom. Yeah. Boom. Oh, here we go. Rolling Stone magazine said, and their number eight punk. So this is the number eight punk album of all time.
According to them, yes.
According to them. And seven is Minutemen, Double Nickels on the Dime. That's one of my, and Wire's Pink Flag, which ruled. That was really cool, Michael, because we had we did Minutemen and Wire back to back.
Oh, cool.
And from when we did Minutemen, we had the lead singer of Soul Asylum on. Mm-hmm. And then the next week for doing Wire Pink Flag, we actually had Mike Watt from Minutemen. Oh, cool. So it was like a double episode. Oh, dude, look at this, dude. And then Gang of Four Entertainment, which I fucking loved. Rest in peace, Andy Gill. The Stooges, Funhouse, Sex Pistols, Nevermind the Bullocks, number two, The Clash, self-titled, and number one, The Ramones. Random facts. All right. So this is the last time we're going to talk about Black Flag on the podcast. In the new 2020 list, this plummets to number one. This plummets 147 spots, number 478. It did rank number 25 on the top 100 albums of all time. Not of all time, of the 1980s. Yeah, the new list is bunk. Kurt Cobain listed this as his top 50 albums of all time. All right, some nice album reviews. Reviewing for the Village Voice in 82, Robert Christgau gave this a positive review. Although the B-side drags more painfully than I bet was intended, this is powerful stuff. Greg Ginn is the greatest noise guitarist since Johnny Thunders from the New York Dolls. The new vocalist Henry Rollins can snarl along any tortured contour they serve up, and Rise Above, Six Pack, and the uproarious TV Party prove they can write songs as well as Nash fragments. And then any bad ones? What do we got? Is there a good bad one? Which one? The MCA?
Yeah, that one's pretty solid.
Consisting of mostly undigested lumps of bile spat out with a caustic vehemence, the word uncompromising might well have been designed with LA punk combo Black Flag in mind. There's an almost autistic single-mindedness about the album's monochromatic howl, consisting of short, sharp shock songs taken at a frenzied pace. The stripped-back garage sounds is topped by the splenetic baying of vocalist Henry Rollins. Who wrote that?
Oh, I mean, sure. Depending on my point of view, I mean, absolutely, hey man,
I would listen to it because of that, especially that wording. That fucking wording was hard to get out. Short, sharp shock songs. Fuck, that's like I'm gonna start doing that before auditions.
Short, sharp shock songs.
You can't do it.
It's hard to say. Short, sharp.
Hard to say.
Short, sharp shock.
All right. Rapid questions and you're out of here. All right.
Yeah.
Favorite song on the record?
Rise Above.
Nice. Least favorite song on the record?
I'd have to look at the album tracks. I do agree that like towards the end, you're like, all right, it's kind of enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't love like what I see. It's on the first side.
Yeah.
I don't love No More. It's on the second side. Interestingly, they're both written by Dukowski. That schnook.
That fucking schnook. Yeah, dude. That bass player, dude. That bass player. That BPE, bass player energy.
I don't hate any of it. It's just that I do think they could have cut a few songs from this album.
Yes.
You know, it's still a short album. I mean, the whole thing's 35 minutes, but it could easily be 30 minutes and it would be great.
100%. What song on this record, and I ask everybody this, would you fuck to?
Gimme, gimme, gimme.
Nice, dude.
Gimme, gimme, gimme. Give me some more.
And then final question. Why do you think, this is kind of a loaded question. Like, do you think this deserves to be on the 500 greatest albums list of all time? And why do you think people in this younger generation, not millennials, what's after that?
Z's, the Zoomers.
Why do you think they should listen to this?
I do think it deserves to be there. Not so much because of what it's doing musically, although I think it is doing something new and interesting musically for the time, as well. I mean, yes, musically, because it's announcing something. It's announcing something new in that moment in time. It's announcing not only just a sound, but an ethos. It's sort of saying, fuck you, we're going to do this shit all ourselves outside of your system, and we're not going to care what you think about it, particularly, we're just going to do our shit because we have to do this shit. Yeah. There wasn't a lot of that going on. I mean, it was starting to bubble up. I mean, Black Flag was not the first punk band, but I feel like they announced the American version of this movement in a way that hadn't been done before. And so it's worth hearing for that.
I couldn't agree more. I think if you're going to listen to any punk rock, the Green Days, the Newfound Glories, the bands that are doing it now, you have to go back to the roots. So for this being an important record, I can see exactly why it's on the list. My review could have cut a few tracks, but all in all, I'm going to give it 3.8 fleeces out of 5. What do you give it, Michael? How many fleeces?
What's a fleece?
That's just what I use to review, because I'm the king of fleece. Because one day I inherited money when I was like 18 years old. Uh-huh. And I gave half to my parents. It was only 40 grand, but with the other 20,000, I just blew it. And
why did they take your money? Why did they take it?
Because it was more, they needed it, man. We were I didn't want to give it to them. I tried to fight them on giving it, but they were like, we want to buy the house back. And I was like, here's 20 grand. And then with the other, I wish you were with me back then. You could have like helped like defend myself and keeping my money. But then one day I went to the mall and I bought $2,000 worth of fleeces. And so, I was cold. The fans call me the king of fleece. So how many fleeces you giving this out of 5?
I'm right there with you. I'll bump it up to an even 4. Even 4.
4 fleeces. You heard it here, people. Michael, promote away, please. Anything you got coming up? Anything you want us to check out?
Nah, my life is a disaster. I mean, if you want to see me, I'm performing in your town at some point because I got nothing else to do.
Nice. Dude, this is great. Thank you, buddy. What did I tell you? What did I tell you? The one and only Michael Ian Black. Follow him on all social media at Michael Ian Black. Get his book, A Better Man, A Mostly Serious Letter to My Son. Check out his website for all things Michael, michaelianblack.org. He's got an orgy. Most people don't have orgies. All right, for listener shout out this week, I want to give a shout out to Magnificent Kevin. Dude, you rule. You've been with me since the jump. KG. Magnificent Kevin on Instagram. Follow him, give him love, tell him you love him. Now, we just listened to Black Flag from 1981. For new music pick this week, guess what we got? Listener submitted, and it's my good homie supreme, Alistair McLeod. It's his Calgary, Canada-based band, Less Miserable, which they produce the kind of post-emo pop-punk tunes that are perfect
for drinking cheap beer and shouting along in a sweaty basement. Hugely inspired by the one and only Black Flag. 2, 3, 4. Oi, oi. You're listening to the song Debts, Doubts, Discouragement. And you can find links to their music on our website, the500podcast.com. Thank you, Alistair, for sending your song in. If you are in a band and you listen to this podcast, or if you don't listen to this podcast, but your friend does, if you got a buddy that's in a band and you want to help launch their careers, send your song to 500podcast@gmail.com. Make sure you put the artist and album that influenced you in the subject line. Next week, it's Tommy Waits week as we go deep into his 1974 record, The Heart of Saturday Night. Ooh, it's our third one. Do your homework, everybody. My home is. I can't afford Dick. It's seen I'm in while all my friends are having fun. I've been waking up with bed bug bites and I can't afford to fix it. And every paycheck is getting spent on minimum payments on my debt. And then my rent, and I'm broke again. And I'm trying not to let on that ever since I left home, it's all been going wrong.
Hey there, I am Johnny Christ from Avenged Sevenfold, and I've got a podcast called Drinks with Johnny you're going to want to check out. I sit down with a bunch of different people from all different walks of life, from professional wrestlers to actors, comedians, fighters, musicians, everything in between. I'm just looking to make some friends and have a good time doing it. So if that sounds like something you're into, go check out Drinks with Johnny, streaming everywhere now.
The number you have reached is 100.7 WMMS.
It wasn't just a radio station, it was a lifestyle.
Cleveland is a rock and roll city for sure.
I do like the Strongholds.
Get down!
The Wrath of the Buzzard. WMMS. Cleveland.
The rise and fall of one of the most iconic radio stations in America. Profiles. The Wrath of the Buzzard. PROH Files. Subscribe now wherever you get podcasts.
Next Chapter Podcasts.